You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Revived Thoughts is a production of Revive Studios.
This is Troy and Jill, and this is Revive Thoughts.
And if, O Greeks, you refuse to believe in this because you see bodies in their state of decay, learn not to be incredulous.
Every episode, we bring you a different voice from history in a sermon that they delivered. Today, we're listening to a sermon by Hippolytus. It was preached sometime in the 3rd century in Rome. We're pretty sure. Hippolytus, Troy, you and I talk about Hippolytus quite a bit. That we finally get to bring it to the masses and talk about Hippolytus publicly.
When I hear you say it that many times in a row, it sounds like a disease you have. Like, yeah, we're so sorry, but like, well, the reason you've been feeling that back pain is Hippolytus is actually... it is not a back pain, though. It is a person who lived. I think this will probably be the only episode we ever do on Hippolytus, and
one and
you will
done.
See why. It's a one and done, because this is, for starters, the sermon you're going to listen to today is not even a full sermon. It is a sermon fragment. It is all we have left of part of a sermon. And as you look at the story of Hippolytus, you're going to see there's a very unique aspect of Hippolytus. We've had some unique people on before, and Hippolytus is unique in a different way than other people. He's unique. Something about, as we'll explain in a minute here, there's stuff about him that kind of stands out to other people. But first, Joel, some positive responses to the show. Phil said of a recent sermon of ours, we got eternal security and eternal rewards, future reigning with Christ, mention of a coming Antichrist, and the foreknowledge and love of God towards Cain, even though he knew Cain would slay his brother. Whew, what an interesting, super interesting sermon at Revive Thoughts. That was our Kyprian sermon during a plague, and I appreciate that you enjoyed that so much. It's an interesting sermon, I agree. And it seems to be a part of our recent 2025 is just the year, at least we're starting off here with just old sermons, ancient sermons, going back. Like, we've had more really old sermons on the show, I think, in the last couple months than we've ever had. I mean, our sermons are always old, right? The people who preach them are dead, so there's that. But these sermons are just the ancient ones that we've been really knocking out, the ones from, including today's. I do think we're kind of getting to the end of that. I've looked at our schedule, and I think that there's just only one more that's going to even be pre-Reformation, and it's from the 1400s. So we're kind of coming, wrapping up the ancient one. So if you've really been enjoying that, let us know which of these old people was your favorite. And if you're ready to get back to like some George Whitfields and some of that kind of stuff, well, we have good news that that is all coming as well. Another comment was on Spotify. It's on our Lemuel Haynes, Universal Salvation and Ancient False Doctrine. This one, and that is an old one. That is, I remember when we put that one out. That is our first, like, 15 episodes, very early on. Odie Maz Hindu says, wow, the truth loaded in this, quadruple exclamation marks. And then he says, thank you for making these sermons available to us. God bless you. And as I always say with these really old comments, you're welcome. And I hope you continue listening, because we have a lot more where that came from. You've got a long journey ahead of you if you're listening through those right now. So in a couple of years, when you hear this comment, know that we did read it on air, and we thank you for that. Also, Lemuel Haynes, great sermon. What I love about that sermon is that it was preached off the cuff. Lemuel Haynes was on his way as a pulpit supply to help out. Somebody was going to come to his church. He found out the guy coming to his church was a universalist, so he turned around. He left the other church in the lurch. He goes back to his church, and after this guy, the universalist, preaches, Lemuel Haynes is asked, like, hey, do you want to say anything? He gets up, he gives this sermon, Universal Sermon Salvation, an Ancient False Doctrine, and just blows that guy out of the water. And it's a great sermon. I love that he did it without any prep. He just got up there and preached from the heart, and he absolutely nailed the problem with it. So good stuff. But we're not talking about Lemuel Haynes today and his great sermon. We are here to talk about Hippolytus, an unknown man, and unknown for different reasons than some of the unknown people we've had. We've had unknown people where, like, the name is so obscure. He's such an unknown person to us that it's like a grave finder is all I could find in the research of him. Like, he's a footnote in someone else's story. We've had a few of those. We kind of even done episodes, I think, over the course of 6 years, we've done maybe three or four kind of dedications to the unknown pastor or to the small town pastor you'll never hear again. Those, I love those episodes. But Hippolytus isn't that episode. He is unknown, but it's for a different reason. And the reason is, Joel, why don't you tell us about it?
Yeah, it's almost the opposite situation. His lore, his mythos is well known, but the actual documentation around who he was as a person is the things that are lacking. The evidence is lacking there on that front. And so, and this stuff fascinates me. I eat this stuff up. I love this kind of weird, not so much from a theological standpoint. It's actually very problematic when it comes to a theological standpoint, but from just an idealistic standpoint, the realm in which kind of lore and history overlaps enough to where everything is plausible, but nothing is guaranteed, you know? It just, the imagination is just allowed to run rampant, and I find that an interesting overlap to exist in, and that is firmly where Hippolytus exists in. We know he was a real person, you know, we have evidence of him, but most of what's said of him is maybe, probably, might have happened, probably didn't, maybe, is where... I'm personally more inclined to endorse claims of Hippolytus than Troy is. Troy is a big Debbie Downer when it comes to evidence.
Sorry, man. You aren't tricking me, Hippolytus. I'm not even sure if he was a hippo. That's how uncertain I am about this episode.
Hippolytus, if you look him up, like on Wikipedia, you'll see that he was born in Rome in the year 170 AD, and that he was a disciple of Irenaeus and Polycarp, and that he was a bishop in Rome until he died in around the year 235 AD. But pretty much all that information, you know, it does not come into play until almost 600 years after that era when the Catholic Church would kind of imply this history about Hippolytus. And so there's no contemporaneously indications of necessarily where he was. We do know that, again, there is evidence that he was definitely around. There's evidence that he was martyred, which we'll get into a little bit more. But Troy has a big beef taking the word of a Catholic Church 600 years after the fact as a reliable source for life.
I'm not saying it's possible that the Pope writing that story down had access to information we don't have, that he had access to some books that really told the Hippolytus story, and that he had that through that documentation he wrote the story down. But I don't know where he got it from. He doesn't say where he got it from. He doesn't mention where his secret sources were coming from. The earliest writings that I could find that mention him come from Eusebius and Jerome. We featured Jerome on the show last year. We had a sermon by him. He did a sermon on the Psalms. Jerome is a pretty solid guy. We like him. And Eusebius is a guy mentioned a lot in church history stuff. He was one of the first big church historians. We have so much information in the early church thanks to Eusebius. So I'm not doubting either of these guys. They're good at what they do. But Eusebius' story says basically just mentions that Hippolytus was a bishop, but it doesn't tell us what city he's in. And Jerome also mentions that Hippolytus was a bishop, but also doesn't mention that he's the bishop of Rome. So here the two earliest guys are talking about him being a bishop, but they don't say that he's a bishop of Rome. And I find it hard to believe they would have dropped that part out. The Rome was such a big deal that when you're a bishop of Rome, it seems like he gets mentioned everywhere else, but except for Hippolytus' story. Now, Jerome also adds some of the writings that he wrote and even kind of tells us the story where I heard it both ways when I did the research, that he preached a sermon and Origen was there. And like while he was preaching, Origen, if you don't know, early church father, big, big deal. And he kind of pointed at Origen and was like, hey, are you listening? You know, like would mention him in his sermon. It was, one version was almost like he kind of called him out on something. Another was like, hey, I see you today, Origen. But then another version of it was the other way around. Origen was preaching and Hippolytus was pointed to and he was like, hey, I see you, Hippolytus. I couldn't figure out which one was correct in my research there. So This overlap with Origen, though, tells us he would have been in the early 3rd century, kind of the 200s is when he would have been living, because we have very good confidence that Origen died in 253. So if Hippolytus gave a sermon and Origen was there, or vice versa, either way, we couldn't be doing it in the, you know, the early 300s, because Origen wasn't alive then. So we have pretty now guaranteed of the era he's living in, Hippolytus, but we don't have the location mapped down very well. Now, Prudentius is a poet that is living at the same time as Eusebius and Jerome. And he also gives us an early account of Hippolytus and his poetry. And he tells us that, Hippolytus was a martyr and that he died being torn apart by wild horses. And this is the first time his martyrdom by wild horses gets added into the story. But even that is something that I look at and I go, I don't know. Why is it true? And there's some circumstantial evidence that might work against even that part of his story being true.
Why is it so hard for you to believe, Troy? Why don't you just believe? It's more fun.
I'm a cynical guy. I don't just trust everything. I gotta find some verification, right? But also, it should. If you're a listener to the show, it should make you comforted, because I'm usually so accepting. Because usually, I feel pretty confident about what I'm presenting to you. But when I was presenting this one, there was such scant evidence. I just didn't have that level of confidence. So this is what I.
Such a cool story.
When I go through history,
though.
This is. It is. I love it. I don't want to say I would want nothing more than for it to be torn apart by horses. But story-wise, it would be very intense. And we do know the Romans did do it. Yeah. It's just I'm not convinced that that's how – I'm not convinced 100% that's how it happened, because I don't know that it's for sure.
Yeah, so just to clarify. So Hippolytus was reportedly killed by being quartered by horses. You know, you have your four extremities tied to horses, four different horses running in four different directions, and it rips your limbs off, and you ended up getting dragged off and bleeding out and dying behind a running horse, which, again, was something that the Romans did. So there is one scenario, scenario one, in which this is perfectly plausible and something that might have just happened because it was something that the Romans did in ways to kill people. Hippolytus's name, it comes from Greek mythology. Greek mythology, of course, is something that was very big, something everyone would have been aware of in that era. Hippolytus, the character in Greek mythology, was killed when Poseidon sent a sea monster, and the sea monster frightened Hippolytus's horse, and the horse ended up kind of bucking him off, but Hippolytus was caught in the horse and ended up dying because he got dragged behind his horse. And so there's what Troy's speculation comes from. Isn't it a coincidence that Hippolytus in Greek mythology also died getting dragged behind a horse, whereas Hippolytus in real life died getting dragged behind a horse? And it's a little bit of a chicken and egg situation here, or a art inspiring life type of thing, right? So the I guess scenario one is this just happened because that's one of the ways that Romans killed people. Easy, boom, open and close case. Step two, or option two, is that this was something the church fabricated, or like people said of him, a myth made up of him because his name made sense along with Greek mythos. You know, this is how people named Hippolytus die. It thematically makes sense with his name. This is probably how he died. So that form of death was attributed towards him. Or C, which I find the most fascinating, is it could have just been the Roman soldiers, you know, being aware of Hippolytus in Greek mythology, were like, hey, Hippolytus got killed being drugged by horses, right? Wait, let's kill this Hippolytus dragging him by horses, right? And so they decided to use that execution method primarily, you know, inspired by his name, all right? That's also an option as well. I don't know. I think honestly,
of all three of those options, I actually think C is the most likely. The Romans had kind of a sense of irony, a sense of humor, and like not humor as in ha-ha that we'd find it today, but like they did that kind of stuff. I think in the story of Perpetua and Felicity, which you can go listen to their story on Martyrs and Missionaries told by Elise, but there is like a moment where they purposely have somebody stomped to death by like a cow, that they kind of drove crazy because the person dying was a woman, and they thought it would be funnier if a woman died by a cow because the cow's a girl. Like, so they did weird stuff like that, like where they would try to connect the death to something greater. And so it totally would be well within the realm of the Romans to go, hey, this guy's named after a guy killed by horses. What if we killed him with horses? Like, that absolutely 100% is a very Roman way of thinking of how to get rid of somebody. So it's possible. I don't want to take it away and say it's not. I can't say for sure.
Sounds like you're buying into the story. It sounds like you're believing.
I want to believe. Like, I'm the guy from the Disney kids movie. Like, I want to believe in Santa, but I just am not sure yet, right? Like, I want to believe in this story 100%, but I got to have that evidence. Now, in 1551... they found a statue fragment, like a marble statue fragment of a martyrdom of Hippolytus. So it is dated to the 3rd century, the 200s. So it's pretty clearly established, and it seems to have been celebrated by the church. He was a martyr. And you don't make a statue out of a guy saying he's a martyr unless he is probably a martyr, especially in that era. So we do have pretty good evidence that he was, in fact, killed for the faith. My question is, was he actually killed by horses?
That's enough evidence for me. If you say we have a martyr,
a horse punching him down, I would have a different story, okay? We found a fragment of him as a church statue, but we didn't find him dying by horse attack. So that's different.
You're specifically nitpicking the method of his execution, which...
Show me from the 3rd century a statue of a horse kicking him in the head, and I'm going to go, yep, no, I think he was killed by a horse. You've got me there, guys.
You have no reason to think that he didn't die this way, other than you're being stubborn.
Other than Eusebius doesn't say it, Jerome doesn't say it, and the first guy who says it's a poet. And I'm not saying poets are unreliable. I'm just saying, if
really,
because
to me that's exactly what it sounds like you're saying.
Would you trust Taylor Swift's version of a story over the historian's version of the story? I mean, come on, right? Like, the poet's going to make it a little more dramatic.
If there was no contradicting accounts, and if it didn't contradict, if it reinforced the existence of something else.
Like, you know, if the headline, I just did an episode on the news, so here I am using CNN. But if a headline's like, you know, bomb goes off, and then someone else comes along and is like, it's raining grenades or something, I don't know, would you automatically assume the musician had told the story better than the headlines? And of course, this goes very much against my own episode on the news recently, so maybe you would. We know he wrote one book. We have this book. We knew about this book for years. It'd been mentioned by other people. Hey, he wrote this book. And you know this book. You have it on your bookshelf. Everyone's got a copy of it. Joel, how many times have you read that? How many times have your kids, you know, daddy, one more time, tell us another story from the book titled Philosophumena. All right. How many times are they asking for that one? Is it every night or like twice a day?
Nightly reading in the Bordas household. Philosophumena for sure.
Yeah, the biggest problem with reading.
We should also mention that this book wasn't actually discovered until 1851. So the vast majority of our church age era existence for the past 1500 years or so, there was a 1500 year gap in which Hippolytus was dead, and we had literally no written evidence of his existence. I mean, we knew of him through church history, church tradition, but it wasn't until relatively recent, in the past 200 years, that we actually found writings of his, which is wild to me, and which is why I think Troy's being a little bit ridiculous, because like, it just kind of proves that we are still in a discovering era. Like, what it's very still very plausible we still might find further evidence of Hippolytus.
Sure,
you just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Right. Well, what if we find out he was set on fire and he wasn't stomped to death by horses? He still dies for the faith, but it could have been that he wasn't killed by horses. That's all I'm saying. It could have been thrown into a river.
You could say that about literally any martyr, though, that we have found.
Yeah, but the other martyr sources are much closer together. They're not coming to us from a poet. You know, those poets, man, you can't trust. He just wanted horse rhymed better with he died, of course. And that's why he put it in there. You know, that's what happened. Okay. What I was going to say about Phyllis Sabina, I didn't even get to my final joke on that dumb book title was just going to be the biggest problem with reading to them at night was that, you know, they hardly want to go to sleep afterwards because they're so excited. I didn't even get to make that. I threw the joke in. So thank you. I brought it back to it. Okay. So Phyllis Sabina, it translated into English is the refutation of all heresies. And I want you to remember that this book was written probably around the 230s. And so, you know, this is before Arius. This is before a lot of the heresies that will come up later. And so if you're picturing the heresies of his era, I'm going to read you the list of I looked through the summaries of each of his sections of this book. And I want to read them all to you. Not all of the summaries, but of just all the people he targeted, because I think he succeeded in refuting all the heresies at the time. Let me begin. He goes after Simon the Magician and the Gnostics. He goes after Egyptians and those who followed the false gospel of Thomas. He goes after the Celtic Druids. He goes after the Brahmins of India, the philosophers pre-Socrates, the philosopher cult of Pythagoras, the philosophers post-Socrates, Docetism, Modalism, which at the time was actually accepted by two different popes. He went after them and got into some trouble for going after them. Montanus, Marcion, the Babylonians, the Pharisees, Sadducees, and all other branches of Judaism at the time, and the Thracians up in Bulgaria. Bulgaria, India, the Celtic Druids, and Egyptians, and Babylonians. And that feels like everybody to me, right? Like, who did he miss? You know, maybe for his era, that is pretty much all the heresies I can think of during that time period, plus ones I didn't know about.
What a wild time to be alive. And that was the reality of the world you were navigating.
Yeah. I mean, we as Christians, we have a lot of different things. There are a lot of different movements. But we don't have to – nobody's sitting here going, those Babylonian mystics going to come back, right? Like, I can't remember the last time I had to deal with Celtic Druids. So it's we do have – some things have gotten better over time.
Okay, so the sermon that we're going to listen to is actually – so it's not even a full message. We have a fragment that we can reference here. It's real fascinating. It's a speech that he was giving against Plato, which is a cool thing to have. That's a neat excerpt to be able to document here. We cleaned it up best we could. Again, there's a lot said about Hippolytus as – a person in the mythos of church history, but when we're trying to look at the evidence of who he was as a Christian, you know, what we see is someone who is Christ-centered, has this Christ-centered worldview, someone who's against heresy, wants to take a stand up for heresy, you know, things that we can get behind. In this message, Hippolytus is arguing for what heaven for Christians will be like and how it compares to the worldview of the Greek culture that he was in at the time.
And this is the passage regarding demons. But now we must speak of Hades, in which the souls of both the righteous and the unrighteous are detained. Hades is a place in creation that is crude, found in a location beneath the earth, in which the light of the world does not shine on it. And since the sun does not shine there, then there must necessarily be perpetual darkness. This place has been destined to be, as it were, a guardhouse for souls, at which the angels are stationed as guards, distributing according to each man's deeds the punishments for their character and behavior. And in this location, there is a certain place set apart by itself, a lake of unquenchable fire, into which we suppose no one has ever yet been cast. For it is prepared against the day determined by God, in which one sentence of righteous judgment will be justly applied to all. And the unrighteous and those who did not believe God, who have instead honored as God the vain works of the hands of men, idols fashioned by themselves, will be sentenced to this endless punishment. But the righteous will obtain the incorruptible and unfading kingdom, who indeed are at present detained in Hades, but not in the same exact place as the unrighteous. For in this location there is one lower spot that is perhaps guarded by an angel. And when those who are conducted by the angels appointed to guard souls have passed through this gate, they do not all proceed to the same exact place. But the righteous, being conducted in the light toward the right, and being guarded by the angels stationed at the place, are brought to a location full of light. And there the righteous from the beginning dwell, not ruled over, but forever enjoining and contemplating the blessings which are in their view. For they are there delighting themselves with the expectation of new blessings, and deeming those even better than life's blessings. And that place brings no toils to them. There is no fierce heat, nor cold, nor thorn, but the face of the fathers and the righteous is seen to be always smiling as they wait for the final rest and eternal reward, revival in heaven, which comes after this location. And we call it by the name Abraham's bosom, but the unrighteous are dragged toward the left by angels who are ministers of punishment. And they no longer can go where they'd like to, but are dragged by force as prisoners. And the angels appointed over them send them along, reproaching them and threatening them with an eye of terror, forcing them down into the lower parts. And when they are brought there, those appointed to that service drag them to the prison of hell. And those who get near it hear incessantly the cries of agitation and feel the hot smoke. And when that vision is so near, as they see the terrible and excessively glowing spectacle of the fire, they shudder in horror at the expectation of future judgment, as if they were already feeling the power of this punishment. And again, they can see the place of the fathers and the righteous, which is also a punishment to them. For a deep and vast abyss is set there. So that neither can any of the righteous in sympathy think to pass it, nor any of the unrighteous dare to cross it. This is an explanation of the subject of Hades, to which the souls of all are detained until the time which God has determined. And then he will accomplish a resurrection of all, not by transferring souls into other bodies, but by raising the bodies themselves. And if, O Greeks, you refuse to believe in this because you see bodies in their state of decay, learn not to be incredulous. For if you believe that the soul originated and is made immortal by God, according to the opinion of Plato, then you ought not to refuse to believe that God is able to raise the body also. For it is composed of the same elements, and easy enough for him to make it immortal. To be able in one thing and to be unable in another is a word which cannot be said of God. We therefore believe that the body also is raised. For if it becomes corrupt, it is not at least destroyed. For the earth receiving its remains preserves them. And they, becoming as it were a seed, and being wrapped up with the richer part of earth, springs up and blooms. And that which is sown indeed, bare grain. But at the command of God, the gardener, it buds and is raised, splendid and glorious, but not until it has first died and has dissolved and mingled with earth. Not, therefore, without good reason do we believe in the resurrection of the body. Moreover, if it is dissolved in this season, on account of sin and is committed to the earth as to a furnace to be molded again anew, then it is not raised the same way as it is now, but pure and no longer corrupted, and to every body its own proper soul will be given again. And the soul, being imbued with its body again, will not be grieved, but will rejoice together with it, abiding itself pure with its body also now pure, and a perfect soul coming to a perfect world and receiving its body back perfect will do so with complete joy. But the unrighteous will receive their bodies unchanged, and unransomed from suffering and disease, and unglorified, and still with all the ills in which they died. As such, they will be faithfully judged. For all the righteous and the unrighteous alike, for the Father has committed all judgment to him. And in fulfillment of the Father's counsel, he comes as judge, whom we call Christ. For it is not Minos and Rapidimes that are to judge the world, as you imagine, O Greeks, but Christ, whom God the Father has glorified, he, in administering the righteous judgment of the Father to all, assigns to each what is righteous according to his works. And being present at his judicial decision, all, both men and angels and demons, will utter one voice, saying, "Righteous is your judgment." To those who have done well will be assigned righteously eternal bliss, and to the lovers of sin will be given eternal punishment. And the fire, which is unquenchable and without end, awaits these judged as unrighteous. And a certain fiery worm, which never dies and which does not waste the body, but continues bursting out of the body with unending pain. No sleep will give them rest. No night will soothe them with rest. No death will deliver them from punishment. No voice of friends will encourage them, for the righteous will never be able to visit them again. And they are not worthy of being remembered by the righteous either. But the righteous will remember only the righteous deeds by which they reach the heavenly kingdom, in which there is neither sleep, nor pain, nor corruption, nor care, nor night, nor day measured by time, nor even a sun moving in its necessary course the circle of heaven, which marks the limits of seasons, or the points measured out for the life of man so easily seen today. Nor moon waning or waxing, or inducing the changes of seasons, or moistening the earth. There is no burning sun, no constellations, no Orion coming out to numerous wandering of stars. No painfully trodden earth, no secret paradise hard to find, no more fears of the roaring sea, which make it impossible to travel on. But this too will be readily passable for the righteous. There will be no heaven inaccessible to men, nor will the way there be one impossible to find. And there will be no earth that doesn't grow, or toilsome for men, but one producing fruit spontaneously in beauty and order. Nor will there be generations of wild beasts attacking men any more. And with men there will be no more generations again, but the number of the righteous remains unchanged, with the righteous angels and spirits. You who believe these words, O men, will be partakers with the righteous and will have part in these future blessings, which eye has not seen nor ear heard, neither have entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for them that love him. To him be the glory and the power forever and ever. Amen.
In this sermon, he goes up against Plato and compares the Christian worldview, what heaven will be like for us, the things that we'll see in the future, against the Greek worldview of what the people of their time were seeing. And for them, their worldview of the afterlife was depressing and morbid and sad. And he's comparing that to the greatness of what we Christians believe in. Now, you may look at that and go, look, you know, I appreciate Revived Thoughts and what they do, but you know, when you're doing sermon fragments against Plato, how does that reflect my life? But I think that, look, we may not have a bunch of people who believe in Plato's afterlife today, but we certainly have a lot of people around us who believe in a sad and dreary existence after they die. A lot of people believe there's nothing to existence. Yet what we have, just like Hippolytus had, was the hope of heaven. And we have the knowledge of knowing we're going to see our Father in heaven someday, that the creator of the universe sees us as his children and is calling us back home, that we will be in a place, as Jonathan Edwards called it, a place of all love, of all affection, of all goodness. And that's what's waiting for us after we die. And we have that hope and message we can share with people. While the people around us have this dreary worldview, us Christians have something good. And I would hope that if there was only a fragment left of your life, if we only had a fragment of what you've done, I hope it's something about, I mean, is it having it be something about heaven, having it being the message of heaven that's waiting for us, is definitely not a bad thing for your fragment to be remnant of. Hippolytus is remembered for really three things. He was a martyr. We're not sure how he died. Maybe died by horses. He was against bad teachings, and he went out of his way to go after every heresy he could think of. And he preached a message presenting the hope of heaven and contrasting it with the world around them. And you know what? If that's all we have of Hippolytus, let me tell you, that's a pretty good thing to be remembered for. I hope that each of us can be remembered. If we only get shreds of our life, let it be something as good as that. I hope that in my life, my love for heaven and my presenting it to the world, my love for Christ and being willing to give my life for him, and my desire to correct bad teaching, that is certainly not a bad thing to go down and be remembered for. And I hope that we can I hope our lives are overflowing in such a way that those things are shared with those around us as well.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Revived Thoughts. Today's sermon was narrated by Matt Maples. Thank you so much for contributing towards another episode of Revived Thoughts.
If you enjoyed this episode, we ask that you would give us a 5-star rating. Leave a comment on Spotify. Tell us about, share it on your page out there on the social media world. This is a unique episode, and that I can say with confidence, we are one of the only Christian podcasts in the world talking about Hippolytus. I do know one other podcast that did, but we were one of the only Christian podcasts in the world talking about this very obscure figure. And yet, I think even in these guys who we don't know their full story and we can't even be fully confident, I feel hope and inspired by what God has used them for. And I hope that the people that as you are listening, you feel that same encouragement from those who lived long ago. So share it with the world. And if you don't mind, leave us a 5-star. It helps other people find our show as well. This is Troy and Joel, and this is Revive Thoughts.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.